This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good morning, Horse World. This is Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March the 4th, episode 862. Good morning, everyone. Well, we have a special treat for you this morning. Over at the Horsemanship Radio Show, Debbie Laux, Monty Roberts' daughter, does a terrific show over there. If you haven't caught it yet, we're going to share an episode of it with you this morning. It's one that came out on Saturday. And it was a first here for the Horse Radio Network in that it combined over 300 years of horsemanship in one roundtable episode. This roundtable discussed horsemanship today with the pioneers of modern-day horsemanship here in the United States, Monty Roberts, Aiton Beth Alchemy, you'll remember from the World Equestrian Games opening ceremonies. He did the Western Dressage. Richard Winters, Dr. Robert Miller, of course, considered the godfather of modern horsemanship here in the United States, and Tom Spaulding. You can hear all of them as they speak and discuss various things revolving around horsemanship. And it was a fascinating discussion. Debbie did a terrific job with it, and never before have this particular group been together to discuss it all at the same time. Really, really neat that she was able to pull that off with everybody's schedule as it is. And also, Monty goes into explaining later in the show about ritualistic habituation. What is that, you ask? Well, you're going to have to find out, but it involves Monty's deer. Yes, the deer that show up in his backyard. Also, tomorrow, don't forget, we have Max Cochran on the EquityMFG.com Celebrity Trivia Challenge. Join us for that. One of our lucky listeners will play for a Redmond Rock gift pack worth over $75. Of course, Redmond Rocks are the mineral blocks of choice here at the Horse Radio Network. Our horses absolutely love it. My pony, Scooter, just licks on this thing for half an hour at a time. It has over 60 different minerals, and it's just cut right out of the quarry. It's not manufactured and pressed like those white ones that you get. This is the true, real thing, right out of the quarry there in Utah. And don't forget to check out how to become an official HRN auditor. Just you can do that by going to horsesinthemorning.com and clicking on the banner in the middle of the page, or any of our other websites for that matter. You can do that all there for as little as $1 a month. You can become an HRN auditor and show your support of the Horse Radio Network. We appreciate you listening. And now the Fabulous Horsemanship Radio Show, Episode 11, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. The Roundtable, 300 Years of Horsemanship.
This is Episode 11 of Horsemanship Radio, brought to you by Index Fund Advisors, IFA.com. Horsemanship Radio is part of the family of the Horse Radio Network. Today, we have a first on the Horse Radio Network. We have five icons in the horse industry with over, get this, 300 years combined experience with horses. This is Debbie Laux, and you're listening to the Horsemanship Radio. I have my producer on the line with me, Glenn the Geek. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Debbie. I'm so excited about today's show because it's going to be a first, actually. We've done roundtables on other shows before here on the Horse Radio Network, but we've never done one with this many people, and two, with this many icons and legends of the horse world. All at the same time.
Woo! I hope we stay on.
Yeah, I hope the technology holds up here.
That's right. That's right. Well, they're going to be rocking on this. I am really excited to hear what they've got to say. I've got just a couple of powerful questions, and then I'm going to let them rule the world of experience in horsemanship. And I'm so excited. People are going to recognize these names. I'll introduce them really quickly so that we can get right into the meat of today.
Yeah. And before we do, one of the things they're going to be talking about, to be honest, I've never heard of, and that's light hands horsemanship. Can you explain to me what that is?
Oh, yeah, I'm really excited about that. You know, there's a little history behind it. We were at a trade show in Sacramento, California in 2006, and there was a gentleman, a veterinarian, from Brazil walking around saying, boy, I love what's going on in the natural horsemanship industry. I love Monty Roberts and Robert Miller and these guys that are leading the way in the Western horse world. And we want to have a part of that in Brazil. And so what he did was he invited, they had to pay their way down there. Dad was actually committed at that time, so he couldn't go down. But Robert Miller and many of these guys all linked arms and went down there and just on their own dime and in their own way, spread the word down there with this, Fernando Rollum is the vet's name, to help introduce natural horsemanship to some of the veterinarian organizations down in Brazil. And that really started a seed plowing that has grown today to thousands and thousands of followers of natural horsemanship in Brazil. And remember, Brazil will tell you that they had some of the most violent, I don't have a better word for it, ways with their the training of horses, but they really want to change because they recognize it. The light hands horsemanship began as, hey, we can't go down there to Brazil every year. We got to do something locally. And there is a gentleman out in San Ynez Valley who volunteered his farm, Intrepid Farms, and they've been doing it for years out there, 6-7 years, I think. And they're going to probably move it now because there's limitations to the farm. There's so many people. I think they've had 14 countries represented in the last one that they had in the spring. So they're going to do it again this year for the last time at that farm. And then they're going to surprise us where it's going to be next year. But many of the people that have been involved are going to stay involved. And they are some of the icons in the industry. Everybody will recognize their names.
Very good. And do we know when this is?
I will put the dates up on the, it's in May. I'll put the dates up on the show notes.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right, let's hear who's going to be on today in this unique forum.
Well, today, first I'm going to start with Eitan Beth Alchemy. He's a lot of people will know him from Western dressage or cowboy dressage. He's the originator of that, and he's one of the founding clinicians of light hand horsemanship, Eitan Beth Alchemy. Then we have Richard Winters. Richard Winters is, a lot of people see him as a host of HRTV's Richard Winters Horsemanship, but a lot of people also know him for he's won super championships all over, cow horse competitions, road to the horse challenges. He's also won the Monty Roberts Equitarian Award for outstanding achievements in human and horse relationships. So he's a well-rounded guy. Monty Roberts, my dad, the man who listens to horses, he's his whole life was spent in the saddle training championship horses and competing in 9 world champions to his name. And then we have Robert Miller, an icon, of course, Dr. Robert Miller, a veterinarian. He's renowned in the etiology and natural horsemanship, founder of many, many books, and a cartoonist as well, great sense of humor, mostly known, I think, for imprinting, full imprinting, has a great system for that. And lastly, we have Tom Spalding, our fifth rounds out. Tom Spalding has an amazing business called Predator, and you can go to his website, you should see. But mostly he is, for this conversation, he is a lover of the horse, and he is also sponsor of the Light Hands Horsemanship Clinic. Support him. He's doing a great thing for horses and for barns.
Yes, and for barns.
Those flies. He was pretty cute. He said, you know, a lot of people get into industries where they come up with a need, and then they fill that need with a product. He said, everybody knows if they need help with flies.
So, that is
Predator
true.
Has evolved. Yeah, it's a family business. It's very cool.
And I hate to tell everybody in the North, but we already are in fly season here in Florida. So we have the fly mask and the fly sheets on already. I hate to tell everybody that.
Oh, they're already hatched. Yuck. It means you have good weather, though.
That's right. Well, let's hear it. Let's get the round table going right after this word from Index Fund Advisors.
Hi, I'm Mark Hebner, president of Index Fund Advisors and proud owner of Monty Roberts Willing Partners graduate, He's a Sugar Bear. You know, investment portfolios are a lot like horses. You need to find one that best suits you, your temperament, and your stage of life. Some people might like an energetic horse and an aggressive investment portfolio, while others are more comfortable with a gentle ride and a more conservative investment portfolio. The trick is to find the one that's right for you. That's what Index Fund Advisors is all about, matching people with portfolios, risk-appropriate, low-cost, and globally diversified investment portfolios. You can find the right portfolio for you by taking the Risk Capacity Survey at IFA.com. That's IFA as in Index Fund Advisors. Or you can call us toll-free at 888-643-3133. That's 888-643-3133.
Welcome. I've got five of the most amazing group of men in the horse industry all on one phone call today. So we have a really special, special show for you. This is going to be, this was prompted by the fact that there is a wonderful clinic that's put on annually in the San Ynez Valley where I grew up, and it's called Light Hands Horsemanship. And these, all five of these guys have a lot to do with that. But more importantly, all five of these guys are amazing horsemen. And you'll recognize each one as I introduce them. You'll recognize their name because they're famous the world over. My first guest today is Bob Miller. He is he was really our patriarch of this group, and I think he'd be okay if I said that. Hi, Bob.
Hi. So I'm the patriarch. It's a pleasure to be on with a group of truly great horsemen, and all of whom are just really special people.
Thank you, Bob. And next we have Eitan Beth Alchemy, and a lot of people know Eitan from his performance at WEG. Say hi, Eitan.
Hello, everybody. I'm here, and I'm really glad to be part of the discussion here today.
Thank you for joining us. It's an honor. Next, we have Richard Winters. He's probably our youngest. You're just our little kid in the group, huh, Richard?
That's right. I'm the junior officer, but I'm an awful good company. Deb, thanks for having me on today.
Well, you've still got 30 years plus under your belt, so yeah. And then lastly, we have... we have Tom Spaulding from Spaulding Labs. We'd like to say hi because he is our sponsor of Light Hands Horsemanship, and he's a lifelong horseman as well. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How are you, everybody, doing? It's a pleasure to be here. And actually, I'm not so much a famous horseman, but I'm the infamous Bugman.
Ah, that's true. That's true. Well, all I can say is thank God none of you have the same name. There's not two Bobs or two Montys. So lastly, I'd like to introduce my dad, Monty Roberts.
Hello, it's Monty Roberts here from Solvang, California, where we had over a half inch of rain last night.
Yahoo! we're really a drought. We're in a drought season right now, so I'm really glad to hear that. As long as we don't start needing boats soon, and I don't think we will. Well, thank you all. Thank you all for joining us right now. I want to go back through the list again before we get into just a forum and open conversation about this. And I'd like to ask each one of you, starting with you, Bob, please. What do you think are the biggest misunderstandings in the horse world right now?
Well, I don't know about right now, but I think the misunderstandings that exist today are the same ones that have existed throughout history. I actually think there are less today. I think we're making great progress, and that's understanding the nature of the horse and how best to communicate with the horse. Basically, we're two incompatible species. We are, biologically speaking, a primate. We're a tool-using primate. We're hunters. And the horse, of course, is a prey animal, and it's not armed with horns, weapons, like many prey animals are. Its defense is flight, so it's a very timid and very flighty creature. So when you put an aggressive tool-using species like the human together with a timid prey animal, you've got an incompatibility. But the horse, because of its unique personality, that despite unnecessary aggression and roughness in handling them throughout history, has managed to become the most useful of all domestic animals, the human species. That's what's so remarkable about the horse. Mm-hmm. But now we have the information that certain individuals have always had throughout history. But now it's becoming generalized, where more and more and more horse people are understanding that you do not have to be unnecessarily coercive to the horse, unnecessarily inhumane, that you can get better results, more compliance, mm-hmm. by using very gentle methods. And this, what I call revolution in horsemanship, is spreading rapidly all over the world, and it's the greatest thing for the horse.
Yeah, nice. Great. Thank you. Well said. Monty, can I ask you next? What do you think is the biggest misunderstanding in the horse world?
But that's a good thing, isn't it? When there starts to be unanimity of mm-hmm. thought, when people are coming together with an understanding that obviously we didn't have enough of for 6,000 years since we domesticated horses. Bob and I go back a long way, and we have visited many times on this very subject. So please let me mirror what Bob has already said, because I agree with and attempt to promote globally the exact statements that Bob made. Mm-hmm. I guess if I had to just say some words and try to be an individual, I would say the greatest misunderstanding has been that we can force or demand from through violence more effectively than any other way the horse is learning, and that's simply coming to fact that it's not true. But apparently for 6,000 years, that's how we felt. And all of us that are on this line have seen some incredible, unspeakable violence and force put on an animal, but it's causing them to want to rather than to force them to. I'll stop and leave some space for the other guys.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you. Eitan, I'd like to jump to you.
When I think about what the misunderstood or people don't understand is some terms that we use today at the natural horsemanship especially, and one of them would be the lightness. I think that people's concept of lightness direct into their hands and rein, and they don't see the whole picture. A lot of us think that if we throw the rein away or we ride without a bridle, we are light. And I think that we need to emphasize and keep forcing the whole idea that lightness is not just about the hand. Lightness is about the way you think, the way you are behave, the way you use your body, the way you use your soul, the way you have your relationship and the harmonship that you have with the horse. That's what lightness start, and that's what lightness not necessary end. I think that another way to look at what we are missing, and I don't know if we're missing, but it's a lot of people look at horsemanship as a science. I kind of like to think it's more like an art form, because to me, to have a horse and don't have the artistic ability to find the connection and draw the picture rather than make the picture, mm-hmm. it's something that we need to look into it and find out how to do so. And I'm going to stop here and let somebody else to continue that.
I love that. That's beautiful. Thank you, Eitan. Well, Richard, would you like to take a stab at it?
Well, it is a great question. I'm enjoying hearing what these gentlemen have to say, but it will allow me to use now the biggest word that I know. I think one of the biggest mm-hmm. misconceptions and problems that people have is that they think about their horses anthropomorphically. That word means applying human attributes to something that is not human. We're so comfortable thinking in human terms, and this is how it makes sense to me, and this is how I can get my head around it, but that might not have any relevance at all to our horses, because as Bob mentioned a little bit ago, they're just coming from a a completely different mindset and world. And so I'm constantly trying to look at the world through my horse's eyes and not apply my thought process, those processes, the way I would consider things. Now, don't stick that on my horse. There's a reason why they do things. People get frustrated. They say, oh, stupid horse, stubborn horse, whatever. But if I could begin to understand where he's coming from, then we realize, well, there really is a reason why. He's trying to protect himself. He's trying to stay alive. And ultimately, once he can survive, he just wants to be comfortable. And so I want to work on my equine linguistic skills. And that's what happens at Light Hands Horsemanship, talking about this language that horses already know. We're not going to teach them anything, but we're going to work on ourselves for a lifetime to see if we can't figure this thing out.
That's great. I love the communication in that, too. That's wonderful. Well, poor Tom, he's had the most time to think about it, though, in fairness now. What do you think, Tom?
That's true. Well, hey, I'll be the cleanup speaker.
Yeah.
My perspective would be from, you know, not the people that these four guys have talked about or people that are horsemen and they kind of understand and they know. But what I think is a big misperception is the people that just know a little bit about horses, and it's in some cases it's just, you know, get up and get on and ride, and what they're missing and the misperception is this wonderful relationship that you can have with a horse. I mean, it is way more than just getting on and going around and riding and going somewhere. It's just, you know, it's the relationship that you can have with this very, very smart creature that will basically could be your friend and can be your friend, and then how that relationship can really help you, if you're a better horse person, become a better people person. And I think that most people that when they think about horses just don't really know that, wow, there's way more than getting on and go giddy up and go ride. So that to me is a misperception to probably the greater community that doesn't knows a little bit or doesn't know much at all about horses, of how wonderful a sport and how wonderful an avocation that basically equestrianism is.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. And now I hope you're all thinking about what you'd like to ask each other a little bit and have a conversation, but I'm thinking that I'll go back through and I'd like to ask you if you feel that, like I do, that horsemanship is going in a good direction these days. It's a little bit like Bob said at the top, that a lot has changed and there are a lot less misunderstandings than there used to be. And I think you all have nailed the misunderstandings and major points that people do getting into the industry. Our audience is composed of a lot of people that are just getting into the industry. They want to advocate for horses. They love horses. And they just want to be, they want to do right for their horses. So, Bob, how do you feel about the direction that horsemanship is going? What do you see? Do you feel good about it when you wake up in the morning? Do you think we're better off?
Well, no question about it. It is truly a revolution because it's changing methods that we have mostly used for thousands of years. And there's a reason that it's happening now. In our society, compared to, say, a century ago, most horse people are educated people today. That wasn't necessarily true a century ago, and many of the people working full-time with horses were actually illiterate. Mm-hmm. So the opportunity for education is there today. The media, the communication that we have today, video, the internet, jet airplanes so that these clinicians can fly all over the world and spread their knowledge and share their information. So these are the reasons that it's happening now and why it didn't happen in previous times. And I add another fact, and that is for the first time in human history, women today numerically dominate the horse industry. Mm-hmm. And I'm generalizing, but as a rule, generally speaking, women, because of their nurturing instinct, are more sensitive to the feelings of the horse. They're more receptive to these gentler, kinder methods of horsemanship. Mm-hmm. And while it was a group of men and cowboys of all things in the Pacific Northwest that started this revolution. Mm-hmm. It was the support of women attending their clinics, buying their videos and their books, that really launched the thing. The men came aboard in greater numbers as time went on. We see remarkable changes, and it will continue to change and continue to improve. It's one step forward for civilization.
That's wonderful. Who else can jump in there? What would you like to say?
Well, since I was second the first time around, I'm going to grab it again.
Okay.
This is Marty here. I was interested in Richard's comments and certainly echo Bob again. I think this female domination, if you will, of the horse industry has changed things. Women, females in our species are nurturers, and they inherently don't want consternation. They don't want fuss and fight. So they quickly learn how to do it in a different way. And Bob is absolutely right that those first guys, the Dorrance brothers, etc., while they just took a step in one direction, man, I mean, I think that's all we needed, you know? And the one thing I would hope for is that the next generation of the kind of people that would call themselves clinicians don't become, you know, too wrapped up in themselves, because the next generation ought to get better or we're not doing our job. And I think we need to leave it so that the next generation can move right on up and keep your mind open that there are ways to improve. Man, I make mistakes every day, and I want to keep telling myself about my mistakes and trying to get better. And I just arrived back from Australia, where I met a young man. You will all hear about him, I promise you. You won't hear him because he doesn't hardly say a word. But his name is Ryan Pendergast. And I mean, this kid is a genius. I'm not sure where he learned it all, but I know that an atheist would have a hard time following me around, because some things are happening like that God's up there just turning the knobs. And when Richard used the word anthropomorphize, that's one of my fears, that as we do get a softer look, a more intelligent look at the horse industry, I think we have to really be careful not to try to make them so human that we fall in love with them and bring them in the house and have them sitting up at the table and stuff like that. You know, you guys all know what I'm talking about, that particularly I spend quite a bit of time in England, and the elderly ladies of England, man, they believe that their horse is their second cousin returned, yeah. You know, so I think we have to leave them be a horse. That's as God intended. And they are horses. They do have these differences. As Bob said, that they're incompatible. I don't think he means that we can't become compatible as we know horsemanship to be. I don't think Bob means that. But our very nature is incompatible. In fact, it's just the opposite, one to the other. And we just have to be careful not to anthropomorphize, but by the same token, we need to learn more about their language, the communication, and as Eitan said, stay light with it all.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Eitan?
Well, I'm kind of overwhelmed a little bit with a lot of things, but I really believe that when we talk about the future and about where we're going with it, I think the clinicians in this country did a tremendous job bringing up at education level that it's sometimes really hard to reach. I think part of the success that clinicians have is because they have a good students. I think the horse community almost demanding education, and by doing so, they produce good clinicians. I always thought that education is be the biggest part of what will make us succeeding with what we try to preach. You know, it's a fact that the horse show industry lost a lot of people because there was no education there. It was all about winning. It's all about ego. It's all about the prize. It's all about the blue ribbon. I think that what we come in the last few years, we saw that people start investing money rather in the show industry, they put it in the educational industry. That's why the expos and the clinics, and we can go all over the country and preach because people get their money back. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we need to look forward, not abusing it and not taking advantage of it, and really produce good generation of teachers.
Well, you know, let me just dovetail on a couple things that I've heard here over the last couple moments. I believe that Eitan stressed the idea that this is an art and it's not a science. And then Monty mentioned the idea that he hopes that we are ever continuing to learn and bounce ideas back and forth with each other. And that's the great thing about an event like Light Hands Horsemanship is I get to go there, and yes, I'll make some presentations on horsemanship, but then I'll be able to pull up my lawn chair right up next to the arena and watch someone like Eitan or Jack Brainerd or Monty or whoever happens to be there that year and see what they have to offer in horsemanship. If it's just a science, then okay, let's just plug in the formula and this is the answer. But if it's an art, then I need to be able to grant some of my contemporaries and certainly my mentors some latitude to express their art perhaps in a little different way than what I would do. But there's still things to learn from that individual. I think that I would just hang this deal up and go become an auto mechanic or something if I thought that I was going to be the same horseman today, or excuse me, 5 years from now than I am today. I'm recognizing that there is so much more out there and so much more available. I'm just touching the tip of the iceberg right now. This is a journey, and the farther you go, the farther you recognize that there is to go. Now, when I was 20, I had it all figured out then. My goodness, I was a bronc stomping, horse training son of a gun, but not anymore. So a Light Hands Horsemanship this year, I'm just going to try to bring my brand of horsemanship. It's not the method that everybody needs to follow. They don't need to do it just my way, but I'll be talking about how we can bring together and marry this idea of what we've now called natural horsemanship with performance horsemanship. I think that sometimes people think that they are mutually exclusive things. If you're going to be a natural horseman, then you really can't be competitive. You can't get to that major league level. And so, you know, how to stay true to my principles and still ask for extraordinary physical and mental things from my horse. And so I hope to bring some of those things out at Light Hands.
Perfect. That sounds great. I can't wait. And Tom, just maybe to finish up, what are you looking forward to seeing at Light Hands? As being a sponsor, I know that you're inspired by the whole event. What are you looking forward to?
Well, the event is a great event for just people to learn. But what's also very special about this event, it's not just what's happening in the arena in front of them. It's what's happening on with the person sitting next to them and the people that come. I mean, the interaction amongst the guests, which are last year we had people from, I think, 14 different countries. Everybody that comes here has a very interesting story, and they're basically they're here because, you know, of Light Hands and this, but the you know, the camaraderie and the event, you know, it's you know, the presentations in the arenas are great too, but also just, you know, the meeting of the people that are there, it's a very special event in many, many ways, not just what's going on out there. One of the things to finish up what you asked Eitan and Bob about the future of what can happen. I think one of the things that's the great opportunity we have now, particularly with the Internet, is that we can do a much better job of conveying with video through the Internet to a mass audience. I mean, a huge audience compared, you know, that's way beyond how many people you could actually ever do a live presentation in front of. Mm-hmm. And so that's a great, an opportunity to have very, very high quality information presented to everybody worldwide. And you know, we've focused on, and I came from a video background, of shooting, you know, every light-hands horsemanship event that's been there. Uh-huh. And one of the things we realized after about the fourth one is, boy, it's really hard to shoot great video with a live event where you can't get in the way and you can't stop and you can't do it again and you can't do a close-up.
Yeah.
And you can't. And so we've since then shoot highlights of the event, but we basically have come and then take each of these guys and shoot for the camera, not for the event. And I think if folks would take a look, and Richard, you can describe it, Nate, you both see how we shoot, it's the net result, it's not a live event, but basically the ability to convey information and show the detail and show that, you know, I lean in this way, and also, you know, just show the, a lot of people miss stuff because it just happens too fast, and, you know, we now have a very high-speed camera that you can slow things down and see much better. So I think that's a huge opportunity in the future of that it's not just the people that can come to an event. It's anybody that's got an internet connection, and that's now getting to be almost everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Can
Thank
I get
God.
One word?
Mm-hmm.
Please, Debbie?
Yes, please.
Eitan. I think when you look at light-hand event, there is nothing like it. That's the only thing, that's the only one in the world who can bring you to a stage that you just go up there and everything looks like you're in heaven. It's in the air. You walk in there and you just feel that all your life you're waiting for that moment. And Tom Wright, you know, it's between the people. It's between one to another. We are inspiring people. I don't know we're teaching that much, but we give them so much to go home and take something with them that they are ready to go home, do what they want to do, and wait for next year to come. And I think that's what the greatest thing about the light hand.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Yeah, well, I can add a comment to that, too.
Please do, Bob.
Well, since I retired from veterinary practice, my wife, Debbie, and I have traveled all over the world doing teaching seminars and participating in educational events. And I'm frequently asked, where's my favorite place? What's my favorite event? And I tell them, it's Light Hands Horsemanship in the Santa Ynez Valley. And they'll often say, but that's right in your backyard. You're just an hour away. You go all over the world. Mm-hmm. Why is that your favorite? And I tell them, because I learn so much. I do, from these exceptionally talented people who have become very, very dear friends to us. I come away every year with new knowledge, and that's why I value it so much.
That's
I could
wonderful.
Say something here, Debbie, if
Please.
You want. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's Monty, and I've been collecting the thoughts here. One of the things, you know, I spent most of my life in the competition arena, and yet I agree with Eitan's analysis of competition. You're there to win. Boy, did I learn that from my father in very early years. You're there for one reason, and it's to win. And that compromises horsemanship. It has to. And that's where the Tennessee Walker got in trouble and the gated horses and a lot of things that have happened, because I can get the horse to do this. If you say this is the degree of excellence you're looking for, I can get him to do it this way, and you win. What I think Eitan would be very pleased with is this latest idea in the dressage world that came through the Olympics last in London, the last mm-hmm. Olympics in London, where the two top horses, gold and silver medal, mm-hmm. were fantastic horses. But the one that won the silver medal was electric. He was on fire. He had higher elevation. He did his each of his challenges with the highest marks imaginable. But in the end, in the judges' conference, I'm told, it really came down to who presented the most sympathetic picture and which horse seemed to be the happiest. And how did the rider and the horse cooperate to come together with a better show than actually the horse that was on fire, who didn't seem to be enjoying his work as much as the gold medal winner? And boy, I think, maybe Eton doesn't agree with me, but I think that this is a turning point for the dressage industry, and it's a wake-up call for all of the contesting events or competition events on horses, that we need to emphasize sympathy, we need to emphasize a cohesive unit, cooperative between horse and rider.
It's not that I don't agree with you, I salute you. And I maybe just concluded by saying that you know that the Cabo Dressage have a competition time now, and Cabo Dressage competition is the only discipline in the world who reward the horse and rider triple his score on soft field. Mm-hmm. Nobody else does it. No. So I can agree with you that if the competition will start looking in harmony and partnership versus the perfect or the correct, I think we're going to change the world around.
Oh, yeah, and we've got to help these people with the Arab horses, particularly those shown in hand. You know, their degree of excellence is set upon the horse that looks like he's got an electric wire attached to him. And that's not the harmony that you're talking about, Eton. And there are many, I don't want to point my finger at one, because there are many disciplines that need help. All of them need help. We all need help. But I think we're on the right track.
You know, I'll just mention this because I do throw my hat in the ring, and for me, it's my own professional development. When I go to a clinic, I'm probably about the best horseman there, and I get a gold buckle every weekend. Everybody just pats me on the back.
Nice.
When I go and compete, you know, they say, Richard, who? Now, what's your name, son? And I go in there, and either me and my horse are together, and we perform, or we don't. And so it's really a truer benchmark of where I am with my horsemanship skills. And I think that, you know, almost everybody has principles that they want to live by with their horsemanship. But when you begin to compete, then, as Monty found out as a very young boy, you also have a goal, and that goal is to come out on top. And so the trick is to maintain your principles while still striving for your goal. But it's all too easy under the pressure of the moment or the peer pressure, whatever, to compromise our principles to somehow achieve a short-term goal. And so I'm striving. I don't know if I always get it done, but I'm striving to go out there and stay true to natural horsemanship and my principles of higher levels of horsemanship and still compete on a competitive level. That's what I'm trying to get done.
Boy, Richard, this is Monty again. I so appreciate those words. I have a little story against myself, really, I guess, for the team. But recently I won 9 world championships with rein cow horses. And it was my life for 40 years or so. And I was recently thrown out of the Hall of Fame, even though I was president of the National Rein Cow Horse Association and was voted Man of the Year 1 year in the National Rein Cow Horse Hall of Fame. But I was thrown out. And it was one guy, really, that had the power to do that. He was named the head of that committee for the Hall of Fame. And I know him, and I showed with him, and so I called him up, and I said, what in the world did I do? I haven't been around working cow horses recently, so did I do something wrong? And he said, well, you know, I just sat there thinking that you should come out because you have not been true to tradition. You have wanted to break tradition. And we are here to support tradition and to revere tradition. And I said, I won't say his name, but I said, sir, you know, I really do respect tradition. One of the steps that we use to get where we are. But if I am required to stay the same to respect tradition, then I don't want to be in that Hall of Fame because it's absolutely against what I believe in. We can all move forward and get better. And he said, well, thank you very much, and hung the phone up. So there you are. Competition is a fleeting fame.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. And this is the same person who will probably say that he's changed a lot in the last, I mean, everybody changes in the way that they've handled horses. They've either...
Yeah, he's changed a lot. I did mention to him that I have video from South America of exactly how my father did it, and
right.
He yelled at me over the phone and said, well, we don't do it that way anymore.
There you go.
Wow, you're not supporting tradition.
Well, I'd like to ask, I don't want to keep you too long. I appreciate all your times, but are there any closing thoughts that you'd like to pitch in here?
Well, I have one.
Please.
I just want to say that how eagerly Debbie and I are looking forward to attending Light Hands Horsemanship again. I believe, our ninth. Is that right?
Is that right? That's great, Bob.
It's the highest spot of the year. Look forward to seeing everybody.
Well, thank you.
I think we were young when we started it.
We were young, yeah.
Yeah, where is Jack in this phone call?
Yeah, that's where you got to get Jack Brainerd.
Jack is counting his ears. He's what? He's 94 now.
I think so, yeah. You know, I've known him for, I guess, 50, 60 years. And I just want to say that I haven't had that much to do with the Light Hands thing, and you guys know that I'm traveling almost every time you have one, although I've been to two, I think, and I certainly completely in favor of this kind of thing, and I congratulate each of you for having founded it and put it on. I hope it never goes away. And I really feel that the goals of the Light Hands Clinic so parallel mine that you know, I'm just one of those troops out there digging ditches for you. And I really thank you for all that you've done, each and every one of you. And Eitan, I was there at WEG in the stand, and I'm so happy to be able to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether any of you know this or knew him, but Carlos Gracida was killed day before yesterday, 10-goal world's leading polo player for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was killed in Wellington, Florida. And his brother Memo was also 10 goals. And they have been helping me with easing up on and getting violence out of the process of training horses in Argentina for polo.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, if you just have a chance to stop for a minute and think about Carlos Gracida, he was a good guy.
Thank you. Thanks for that moment. Yeah. Well, I just did a quick head count of the years between all of you involved in horses, and it's about 300 years. So we just tapped on a lot of knowledge between the five of you, and I really appreciate your time. I hope we can do this again sometime. It's a wonderful forum, and I'm sure our audience will love to hear more from your depth of knowledge. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. It's a privilege.
Thank you.
To be here. If they'd like to see, if people haven't seen about Light Hands Horsemanship, you can just go to the lighthandshorsemanship.com website, and there's also a link from there to our website where we have over 60 videos from each of the Light Hands Horsemen, and then one of every other one of the years that we've been there. So,
including
the most recent one with this super cool high speed camera. So we slow it down so you can see everything.
I look forward to sharing it. We'll put the website in the show notes too, so people can just click on the link. So I'm really excited to hear about it.
Congratulations from Monty, and good luck with your next event.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you,
Monty. Look forward to talking to you later.
Thanks, Monty.
Thank you for joining us on Horsemanship Radio, you all.
Hi, I'm Monty Roberts, and I know that I'm transforming the lives of horses globally. You can learn to do it too on my Equus Online University. There's a new lesson on there each week, all the way from join up to advanced. Watch world's champions give their lessons. Join at MontyRoberts.com. Go to my Equus Online University. You can transform your horse, too.
Well, that was fascinating. I absolutely love the roundtables, and I love when you get that many people together that they can all, you know, share and look at the knowledge that was in on that call.
Unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable. And you know, you ask the question, and you just don't know what they're going to say, but I was hanging on every word because you just know the depth of the experience it's coming from. And I love when you put brains like that together to feed off of each other. Because how often do these guys really get together? They, apparently at the Light Hands they do, but how often do they really get to just relax and talk to each other about the future of horsemanship?
And all of the ladies out in the audience should be mighty pleased that we have these five tough old Western guys saying that women have changed the industry. So there you go.
I agree. I think they said they're taking it over. Isn't that
yeah,
it?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, it is sort of ironic that we had five men talking about women taking over the industry. But gals, we'll get there. I you know, it's just so fun to see some of these young ladies coming up, women coming up in the clinicians world, the training world. We've had Sandy Colliers on and those people that have just dominated, Charlotte Bradal and dressage. But it is fun to see these young clinicians that are coming along. And I think that's what the guys were talking about. They're saying that women are nurturing. They get the empathetic. They're compassionate. And why would they want to hit their horse, especially if a guy like Robert Miller or Monty Roberts is telling them they don't have to.
Right. Exactly. And I did look up some details. It's May 29th to June the 1st, 2014. And as you said, it's out your way in California. Some of the people that are going to be there, of course, are Dr. Robert Miller, who you just heard. You just heard Richard Winters. He's going to be there. Eitan's going to be there, as well as several others. I see Marianne Kennedy's going to be there. We play her music all the time on Horses in the Morning. She's
beautiful.
A musician, and many others are going to be there as well. So
it's a lot of fun.
Definitely something you'd want to see. It says right here it's 90 days and 10 hours from now. So get signed.
Okay, oh, that's right.
Get signed up.
That's right. A lot of fun. And, you know, they have cowboy poetry, and, you know, it's a well-rounded, you really do feel like you've been to camp when it's over. It's like, I don't want to go home. It's really fun.
But that isn't all. We're not done yet, because I'll tell you what, we got a fascinating conversation coming up that we were able to record with your dad here this week, and I just found it so interesting. You can tell when he gets on a topic that he is just so fascinated with and how excited he gets about it, and one of those topics we're going to hear about next, and you know what was the term again? And I'm trying to remember it.
Yeah, it's a long word. It's a mouthful. It's ritualistic habituation. Welcome back, Monty Roberts, Dad. I'm happy to have you back. We've been talking a little bit more about this this developing, what would you call ritualistic habituation?
A natural behavioral event.
Great. Well, I know you've been working at this for some time now, and we wanted to follow, as an audience, we wanted to follow along with your development, your thinking, what you've discovered, what you still have questions about. You were working with Leroy the deer, and I know you always are applying any of these to what you do with your horses as well. So I just wanted to let you talk today and share with us more about where your ritualistic habituation study stands today.
Well, it's pretty deep, Debbie, and some people that just want to go ride their horse and sing a tune or something, you know, may not find it fathomable. But there is a thing going on in nature that I've discovered, and I call it ritualistic habituation. And the reason that I do is that the deer that I work with, the wild deer, never been in a pen. They haven't been raised on a bottle or some silly thing like that. They are wild deer. Not so wild anymore, because I've been able to change that behavior quite a lot. But I've watched them for almost 50 years now in the same family group. And of course, that means that I've dealt with about 7 or 8 generations. Mm-hmm. But it's unbelievable how they have rituals. And I remember Grandma way back, and now this is before I ever thought about this particular behavioral pattern, but Grandma was always on the southeast side of the family group.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And where I worked with them, it just so happens that Solvang, the little village, was on the southeast side.
Right.
And what I learned from that was that all the family of deer would look to the leader for protection. And it's always a female that leads these flight animal groups. It's the lead mare, and it's the lead doe. And Grandma would be, because she was the matriarchal leader, she would be between her family and the potential danger that might come from that village over there with the lights on. And because the deer are so nocturnal, I had to work with them at night most of the time. Late evening, early morning, but a lot at night, right in the middle of the night. And I remember back these patterns of behavior that Grandma taught me. And one of the things that she taught me was don't dart your eyes, move them slowly, drag them as if they're in heavy oil. And when I learned that, I jumped in my pickup and ran down there and started getting horses out that I'd mm-hmm. had trouble with.
Yeah.
Wasn't getting good join-ups and wasn't getting good cooperation.
Okay.
And suddenly, with what Grandma taught me about my eyes, I could do things with horses that I could never do before. And it just stunned me. So I kept working with these deer. And about 4 years ago, which seems like a breath to me, it seems like yesterday, about 4 years ago, I noticed a pattern of habitual behavior. And it was like a ritual, but I didn't know enough about it. I just kept watching. And then there was a little male born that I followed with my eyes closely because at one point in his early development, he had a broken jaw somehow. I don't know whether he got out in front of a car or what happened, but he broke his jaw. And we had to put out some feed for him, and so he would come around because it was the only way he could live, and he would lick up moistened, warm water on grain. He would lick it up, and he could masticate that and swallow it and stayed alive. So I did watch his pattern more closely, and ultimately I could sit down on a rock wall outside of our house. And providing that I held my fingers in a certain place, and providing that I kept my eyes in a certain place, and providing that I did not look up at him, he would come down, jump off the wall on my left side, walk a circle around me, jump up on the wall again, walk a circle behind me and jump down again, and then cross in front of me and face me. And once he did that, then he started taking singular, tiny steps toward me. And I thought, whoa, what's going on? And I looked up and he's gone. He just leapt in the air and flew away. So that night in my sleep, when I was in bed, I thought it was the looking up. That's what Grandma taught me all those years ago, but I couldn't stand it because he was walking toward me. So the next day, he came back, he went through his same ritual, that big circle, stopped in front of me, and I kept my head down, and he kept making his steps toward me. And eventually, he had his head right in front of me. I moved my hand to see if I could touch him, and he's gone. And then it progressed, and I was able to move my hand very slowly. And eventually I could rub him all over his body, but not until he completed his ritual. And one of the things that happened in that ritual was that before I could touch him, he would smell the skin between my thumb and my forefinger, that little web that we have there
mm-hmm.
on each hand. And if he wasn't allowed to smell there, he wouldn't let me touch him. I lost him maybe 10 different days because I didn't let him smell there. And I didn't realize. And finally, he pushed his nose right there quickly. And I thought, that's what you want, so I'll let you do it. And I let him smell both places, and then I could rub him. and I rubbed him all over. And it's gone on now for 3 years. This business of him allowing me to rub him all over, I can put flea and tick powder on him. He comes, he has to walk his circle and take a quick smell of my hands. And then I've passed the TSA security check, and he allows me to get my hands on him. Now, others have watched him, and you can talk about this learned behavior if you want. Mm-hmm. Others have watched him, and now I have one that I call Kim. And Kim comes in, but much more wild. I've only had 1 year with her, and I've only been touching her for about 4 months. So, and I'm not here that much, so I really don't have that much time to work with her. But anyway, she's doing fantastically, moving forward. And I have another one called Jackie, and Jackie is a boy, and I've rubbed him now. And there's 8 of them that I've touched in this family group. And each one of them has a different ritual. Now, how does this come to horses? We have been teaching horses or training horses for 6,000 years in a certain way. And most every trainer will agree, I go out there every day and I do this and this and this. And by golly, I turn him around to the left and I turn him around to the right. And sometimes he doesn't like turning one way or the other, but I just make him do it. And I guess that's human, all right. But what he wants is a ritual. Until it's in his muscle memory. So I say, watch your horse. Let him tell you what his little ritual is, and then ask him. And when you ask him, let him learn one thing. Maybe it's just turn to the right. Let him learn one thing until it's in his muscle memory, really well in his muscle memory, and he can do it like a pro. Then ask a little bit of left. Don't do it both ways in the same day. It's overload for the flight animal, for the prey animal. It's too much. I only know that now, and I've only learned it in the last 3 years. But it's there. And I've tried it with the horses, and it works. I'm in my round pen, and I don't ask them for as many things anymore. I've lessened the load on their intellectual abilities. And I have zeroed in on certain little things that I get them to do, and they're perfectly happy with it. If you overload them, then you'll get them bucking somebody off or bolting away or spooking from something, because they're not happy with their surroundings. Mm-hmm. You have to cause them to be in charge of their own security system. And they tell you what sort of ritual they need to do to clear you off. Now, this is very complicated. It's deep. It's over the top, probably, for anybody that's just, you know, training horses or just riding horses. But it's there. And if you just log that in your memory, okay, and ask yourself to watch for it.
Okay.
I think there will be a lot of horsemen. I know that Ryan Pendergast has already said that he's seeing it.
Ryan's the gentleman that you worked with in Australia recently.
I worked with him in Australia. Mm-hmm. He's only about, well, I think he's less than 30, 26, 27 years of age.
A baby, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And he's and he's only been working in for Gay Waterhouse, where I go and start babies and things. Uh-huh. He's only been working there for about a year. And right. I don't know where he's learned all that he's learned, but I've only had him for a week, and he knows my system as well as I do. He's just an amazing young man.
Yeah. Well, I know he's studied the videos on Equus Online University, which has helped his language, his communication system that you quantify well, which is good. And I think one of the things that I'm thinking as and trying to be the student here listening to you is, I'm hearing you say that the incremental is not about how smart the horse is or how not smart the horse is, but it's about their fear-based emotions that they've got in there, about how difficult it is for them to trust while you're doing the work. So if somebody says to you, you don't understand, Monty, my horse is really smart. He can get that left and right in one day. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and I say, you're absolutely right. Your horse is really smart. Now it's time for you to get smart, too. And there are horses with greater intelligence than another. And that horse that's really smart will do better if we get it right with him than if we say, he's smart enough to do it, so I'm just going to do it anyway. That isn't a good answer, because you want to optimize his learning. You want to optimize his performance and move him to the excellence of athleticism that he's capable of to the maximum degree possible. And that's where I say we have been going too quickly. We have been complicating the lessons too much. Mm-hmm. And that I'm able to get a rider on these horses still in about average 27 minutes, a horse that's never had saddle or rider, while being true to this particular theory that I'm talking about. Okay. I think that my time will probably go up a minute or two, but that's it. But I won't ask them to do a lot of the things that I have asked them to do before.
Yeah.
I will leave it out for now. And I will talk to my owners. I'll try to get them to take courses. I'll try to get my instructors to understand ritualistic habituation, because I think it will be eventually that huge step above and beyond what I've learned in my time and what most horsemen have learned in this particular, 21st century. When we get out there 50 to 100 years from now, I think you will see this become a known fact. And one that's used by the majority of horse people.
Do you have any plans for it to be, put into a trial, a research project, or anything like that? Or is it just you fooling with it right now?
Well, there's plans in my mind for that.
Okay.
I would love to do it. It's one of the reasons, Debbie, that I ask you to invite Dr. Andrew McLean to our upcoming May gathering of instructors, because he's a scientist, and I know the group we talked with before didn't want horsemanship to be a science at all, and that's okay with me. If they want to call it an art form, it's okay with me, but it is a science-based art form, and there are things about in science which have improved the ability of artists to put paintings on canvas, since the days of Michelangelo or something. There have been improvements through science. So I don't want to just dismiss science completely, but I do not think that we ever ought to be run by a scientific lab. I think it is an art form, and I think we have to learn it as an art form. But we can also be scientific enough to do the proper sort of investigations, scientific trials, that will prove or disprove these theories that we tend to come up with.
Very exciting. It's very exciting that you're able to transfer those concepts of the deer that have such a flight mechanism, much higher than a horse's, to, I'm curious about the scent, too. It must be a gland thing you're thinking, or?
It's curious, Debbie. I went into a duty-free shop in an airport, and there was a nice Asian lady there that I've talked with before when I go to buy your mother something or just go in to look at a watch or something like that. Anyway, this lady told me that they love to test for compatibility of the aura of their subject.
Right.
They love to test perfume right there on that little web between your thumb and your pointer finger.
Oh, they use that spot. Oh, that's interesting.
They do. And then she said, watch this. And she put some scent on me of some sort. And I smelled it, and it seemed all right. And then she took a little cotton ball and had alcohol on it. Uh-huh. And she scrubbed it like a dish you'd do, and and then she put a different one on, and she said you can bounce back and forth and get a pretty good idea of how a perfume or a cologne fits the body that you're putting it on. does it fit the aura? And this deer goes there. Now, I see Kim doing the same thing, not as overtly as Leroy does, but Kim reaches over there and just takes a little whiff. If you allow Leroy, he'll bury his nose right in that web and leave it there and really drink in the aura of your body. I don't have all the answers. I haven't
wild horses anymore due to, you know, raising horses in such a domesticated setting. So it's cool that you have these wild horses to be able to.
Yeah, we have deals with people that raise them on large properties or the BLM. Of course, the BLM puts them on trucks and they're adopted. And
That's worse than untouched, though. That's a little bit.
That is worse than untouched. Yeah, but yes, with the school here and everything, we have a fantastic untouched facility here, and so we're able to allow the horse to smell our hand, for instance, very quickly in the training process, so that we don't humanize the horse before we get his natural tendencies, and that's exciting for me. I just watched them do two horses in this past week here since returning from Australia. We had a course here, an advanced course, of five youngsters trying to become instructors, and we had two totally untouched that they worked with. And it was amazing what they did. It's just absolutely mind-blowing what these kids are able to do now with the proper facilities and with the proper education.
That's it. Yeah, it's really exciting to watch. You could charge tickets for that stuff. It's really good. And they're amazing, too, because they keep that pulse rate down. They keep their adrenaline low, and they just go at it incrementally, like you say. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for the follow-up on that, Dad, and keep us informed about... I think you have some other people playing with this in different areas. We'd like to hear from them, too, if you all get together. I know in May you'll get together with your instructors meetup, and maybe there will be something out of that that will be interesting as follow-up for people.
Yeah, and wait till your listeners hear about the police in Brazil.
Ah, we got to get to that story, too. That's great. Yes, that is life-changing.
That's so exciting, and the Queen of England is so over the moon about it.
Wow, look, there's a name dropper. We've got the Police Academy and the Queen of England. Wait for that story upcoming. We're teasing them.
Yeah, well, she's certifying these people that are reaching out to arrive at another level of nonviolence. And the Queen is helping me with that. And she's so excited about it. And it really is something to get into and to learn about.
Well, we'll hit you up for that one, too. We'll get you back on the phone after the next tour. Thanks for joining us.
Good. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Dad. Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Where in the world is Monty Roberts?
Monty is looking forward to meeting some new friends, two-legged and four-legged, in England, March 15, 21, and 29, and in Germany, April 4, April 6, April 8, 11, and 13. And on May 31, we have a night of inspiration with Monty and Pat at Flag Is Up Farms in California. There's limited space there, so book early. The next day, we have an all-day workshop called Life Lessons from the Man Who Listens to Horses. And Monty shares his learned and life experiences to apply to your own life. Dr. Sue Kane and I wrote a book called Life Lessons. It's really a workbook to spark your own journey. So write to admin@montyroberts.com or call on the Pacific Coast 805-688-6288.
For details about today's show, go to horsemanshipradio.com where you can find links, photos, and more information about our guests. And of course, one of the easiest ways to listen to the show is to download it to your smartphone. Whether you have an iOS or an Android, you can just go to the App Store and search for Horse Radio Network. It's free and it's easy and it's the simplest way to listen to all 11 of the shows on the Horse Radio Network.
Yay, we're getting up there. As always, we love your feedback. So please follow us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Monty Roberts and Twitter at twitter.com/Monty_Roberts. And many thanks to our sponsors. Be sure to visit all the other great shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com. And until then, have many happy horse hours.